from meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news. Broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. We have a busy night ahead of us tonight. I'm looking on the News Channel 6 WJBF-TV website, and I encourage you to do that by going to www.wjbf.com, and you'll see that there is breaking news on the James Brown estate. Jackie Hollander is with me. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Dana. How are you?
I'm fine. Never a dull moment for you. What's going on?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I literally just pulled off the side of the road into a house that I grew up in as a child, and I'm here with family, and I feel very safe. I did not feel safe in South Carolina, but I'm here.
If I use the term all hell is broken loose, is that a good term for this case?
All hell has broken loose. I set off a bomb today, and what I was told from the media is that this is over.
Now, I'm looking at a news story on WJBF.com out of Aiken County, and it looks like the Jackie Hollander I know stirred the pot quite a bit. And, I'll turn it over to you. What happened? Last time you were on the program, the judge was deciding whether or not you'd take the stand. The whole story is the James Brown Trust. We're not talking a couple of bucks. We're talking hundreds of millions of dollars.
Millions of dollars.
And where that money was supposed to really go and the evidence that you had, let's take it from there.
You know, I went in, I sat through the hearings, and my motions are filed. I can't get too much into it because of the case right now. And
sure.
There is some more shocking news which will be breaking within the next 48 to 72 hours involving me in Chicago. So I'm going to have to kind of, you'll just have to ride with me through this week. It's going to be a bumpy airplane ride, but I think in the end, I think you're going to see a lot of millions of dollars going out to the poor and to the needy very rapidly. What happened is I sat in the hearings and I listened to the lawyers announce the figure of what they're going to be receiving from, these are the ones that represented the daughters of James Brown and represented Tommy Rae Heine, the lady that claims to be James Brown's wife. And the figure came to close to $12 million in attorney fees.
Wow.
And that is unforgivable. That is unforgivable that over $12 million will go to lawyers who have represented these people in this frivolous effort when they were left out of a will. $12 million taken from the poor and the needy and given to just lawyers.
That's
a representation.
Yeah, I'm not shocked, but I'm shocked, and I don't mean to sound flip about it, but when the trust was set up 22 years ago, mm-hmm. I guess, you helped set up the trust.
I created the trust. I came up with the idea. It really didn't start like it was specifically... James Brown and I did not do it for, like, James Brown.
Right.
This was done because of the amount of money that we were putting forth for the poor and the needy and for granting wishes for terminally ill children and for different charities that I was affiliated with. And I questioned where all the money was going. I'm sorry if I'm very hoarse and my voice is low.
I'll bet.
But I've done a lot of talking, and it was decided by James Brown at that time that 100% of everything that he was a part of him would go into this trust.
Now, there was a proposal that was made from the court or presented to the court, I should say, that 50% of the estate should go to his widow,
right.
Tommy Ray.
25% to his,
to the
25% to his widow and 25% to, and I'm not going to call her a widow because she was never legally married to him.
Right.
25% to the daughters. All of these people were not even in the will. His will stated clearly that anyone that contested this will would be automatically kicked off. And they've all contested it. They've all contested it.
Now, I know you. I know the spitfire that you are. I can see you marching into that court with crates of evidence.
Yes, there were crates, and I think Channel 6 has released, from what I understand, I did not see this footage yet. I only know that my phone has rung off the hook since it broke at about 4 or 5 o'clock this afternoon. And I can assure you that the reporter was, I had actually another night, but the reporter looked at me as soon as they saw the evidence and said, get in your car and get out of here.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
Before we break, had about an hour start before it broke, and I haven't seen it, but I do know that it is pretty damning from what I understand.
Yeah, there's lots on, again, it's WJBF.com. There's breaking news there, and there'll be other news updated, it looks like. Now, let's talk about the evidence a little bit, or what you can talk about.
Okay.
You actually have James Brown on tape, do you not?
Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, I was going to release it on your show, and you went, no. And I'm still got a lot left that I can release on your show.
I know. You know, I wanted to see what happened in court, and I guess that takes me to my next question. What did the judge say? Were you allowed to get on the stand?
Well, that, you know, I sat through it, and it was at the point when they started discussing the millions of dollars that were going out to these people, and I really got sick at my stomach, and I looked at somebody that was sitting next to me, and I said, I'm walking out of this courtroom. I don't have to stay here and listen to anymore. I filed my motions. I know where I'm at. I created the trust. And I'm not going to sit here for another minute and listen to this hogwash. And I'm going to see that this is, it's over. I mean, it's just over. And I just walked outside. And, of course, the press has been waiting. They knew I was coming. And I just said, you know, I looked at probably the nicest reporter there. They were all nice, but I mean, she just had a, you could tell that she knew that the evidence was there. And so I just decided, you know, I'm not going to take the threats anymore. I'm not going to take the intimidation anymore. I can't live under it, and it's going to air anyway, so let it go.
You're concerned for your well-being as long as I was and still am.
Still am.
Because I know you, Jackie, and I know that you're not one to back down from anything. Where does
the threats were there. I mean, they were continuous the whole time there.
Where does this fight go for you now?
That is going to be what everybody hears about in the next 72 hours. But, I mean, it probably is not going to be, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that I can guarantee where the cards are going to fall, but right. Tonight I can pretty much 99% tell you about where they're going to fall.
Did the
so I feel pretty secure in what I'm saying.
Did the reporter, or were you around the courthouse long enough to find out what happened? As far as I agree with you, coming up with a bombshell like this, it probably made the judge turn gray and set everything aside. But what did you find out? What actually happened in court?
I've been told from phone calls that they're saying it's over.
Okay.
And so I, you know, but I mean, you never know. And you know, I know, I feel very secure that when, you know, everything is laid out straight across the board, that it is over. And, you know, I mean, $11 million, $12 million to lawyers or, that belongs to the poor, to the needy, to charities, is unforgivable in this country. It's unforgivable. I mean, everybody has the right to a lawyer. and everybody has the right. But when you go in on contingency, you attack. I'm sorry if I'm kind of making it noisy in the phone. You attack a trust that is designated for the poor and the needy. And instead of paying your lawyers, you say, hey, I'm going to give you, you know, you take from the trust, you sue this trust. I don't think these lawyers should get one dime.
Right.
Because they knew that their clients were left out of the will. They, you know, if they're going to take this money, take it from somewhere else. But if this judge allows $12 million, and let me say this, that's just not including the taxes of what is going to be taxed.
No.
So when it gets right down to it, it's unforgivable. And they accused James Brown's lawyer, Buddy Dallas, of coercion. There was no coercion in this because I was there, and I'm sure everybody on your station knows how I felt about Buddy Dallas for 22 years.
Sure, yep.
I'm definitely not his biggest fan. But I'm going to say this. He is telling the truth. There was no coercion. There couldn't have been because I was there. And I didn't coerce the man because he put a gun to my head only 5 hours later and brutally raped and tortured me. So there couldn't have been any coercion on my part that night.
Jackie Hollander is here. And you know... That's the big part of this, Jackie, and I understand it. Some people that are listening may not understand it. When they say what James Brown did to you and now what you're doing, because James Brown wanted to help the needy, which is a good thing, that people may be somewhat surprised to hear you say that you're trying to do something good, that I'll actually make James Brown look good,
you know,
or am I wrong?
I'm sorry, I had James Brown's right-hand man calling me for the past 2 or 3 weeks, who was with him when he died. And he said to me, I am so proud of you. And, I mean, when he called me, I didn't know what to expect. I figured I was probably going to get threatened.
Right.
So used to getting them. But he's actually supporting me, and they were all calling and supporting me because... you know, they know that a horrible thing happened to me with him. They know the truth. I know the truth. And it didn't come down to what I think of James Brown. It didn't come down to James Brown's wishes either. It came down to millions of dollars that I could see that I sat down one afternoon and thought of going out to the poor and the needy and to victims and to rightful people in our country with the economy the way it is, and this just had nothing to do with James Brown. I just had to turn my head to James Brown and turn my head to God and to the poor and to the needy, and that's what I did.
Well, for sure, the next 48 to 72 hours will be interesting, and you know I'll follow it. Jackie, before I let you go, and I want to rest your voice, and I want you to rest, and I hear that there's bad weather coming your way, too, so you please be careful. You're staying there the night, I hope.
I am. I'm staying with somebody that's like my mom, and I love her, and this is safety, and I'm home, and I'm going to get a home-cooked meal. And it's, you know how when you walk in a house and you smell it and you know that smell and you know you're home?
Yeah.
That's what I had this evening when you were dialing me.
Excellent.
I had just made it home.
One quick question, because there are some correlations between the two cases. I want to ask you your thoughts on Rihanna and Chris Brown and the picture.
Very sad case. Very sad case because... you know, I did not see the picture of her beat. Of course, I understand it was horrible. Adrienne Brown was brutally beat, had her teeth knocked out 4 separate times. She, of course, took him back. There should be some kind of celebrity law,
yep,
created for these icons that abuse women. It should be called the icon law. And it should protect the women that are under that kind of pressure because it's a pressure cooker. She's not going to leave him. It's you know, she loves him, and she loves the attention that she's had with him, and she thinks he'll forgive her and never do it again when they tell you that. But this guy's going to end up killing her, and or else, you know, busting her eardrums or getting her to the point where she's so beat down she'll never get back up on her feet again. And it's a real sad case, and the media needs to really push the point down that this guy's a batterer and he needs to face what he's done.
Well, there is breaking news on that, Jackie, just before I let you go, that Chris Brown has been, two felony charges have been filed against him. So
That's good, and I think what's going on now in our country is these police are sick of it.
Yep.
I mean, that, you know, you're a law enforcement officer, you do your job, you go out, you bring these people in, you charge them, and then these people get scared and they break down. And Dana, that's like rape cases. I mean, I'm a prime example. I was horrified. I was more afraid of the police than I was anything, because when you go into the police department, you know that the police are going to start asking you a bunch of questions, and you know from there on out it's a long, hard road. And that road sits in front of your face, and you're scared.
Yep.
You're scared. And thank God law enforcement has started changing, you know, back from when it happened with me. And they're more sensitive to this issue, and they're really putting their arms around victims, and they're really fighting for the abuse of women very strongly.
And it's a start, and there's a lot of work to be done yet. But listen, Jackie.
Hey, they got you, Dana.
Well, I'm trying.
They got you, and you're spreading the word all over the world, and you're a phenomenal, phenomenal host.
I'm trying, and I thank you for that. And listen, you stay safe. Enjoy your meal. Drive carefully, or I'm going to come down there and kick your butt, okay?
Hey, Dana.
Okay.
72 hours. You remember this, okay?
All right.
And I want to be back on your show because I don't want you to be behind the wheel when this breaks.
You will be. All right, Jackie.
Okay. Thank you. God
Take
bless
care.
You.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's Jackie Hollander, and I wanted to get a Rihanna and Chris Brown comment from her because she's been through that. James Brown raped her, and you know, you can't get a bigger story than that. I sat down with Mark Williams, news director from WNDB, just before the show started. I couldn't fit him in live to get an update on the Anthony case. Here's Mark Williams. Okay, we're back, and with tonight's update on the Casey/Kaylee Anthony case is news director from WNDB, Mark Williams. Mark, how are you?
I am fine. I'm warm down here. It's going to reach 80 degrees by the weekend. Amen.
Yeah, you know, you always rub that in, and I think it's minus 112 here. But anyway, that's you know, I'm going to come down there someday, and you're going to buy me a beer. That's it. That's no more.
Not a problem.
Okay. All right. The Casey Anthony, more evidence. Well, they say evidence has been released. Racy photographs of Casey. I guess it goes to state of mind. There was a hearing in court. Jose Baez tried to get it stopped. What can you tell us?
Oh, boy. All the humanity involved. First off, about 1,000 pages of documents were released this week, dealing with the Anthony case. And one of the most telling things was the fact that her ex-boyfriend, Anthony Lazzaro, met with Casey Anthony's brother, Lee, near a Target store.
Yeah, that's wild.
But the deal is the cops wired him, sent him in there to talk with Lee with a wire on him, okay? Because even though Lee was conducting his investigation, he had no idea until these documents were released that Tony Lazzaro was wired, because they wanted to know, the authorities wanted to know, what Lee knew.
Right.
I mean, this is cloak and dagger. I mean, the Soviets and the Americans have nothing over what has gone on behind a Target store in the Orlando area.
You know, the judge said, and I'm paraphrasing, actually I'm guessing, but it was something like to Baez the other day, this is news and you want me to stop the news. Am I close on that?
Yeah, well, here's the deal, is that Baez was in court, that's Casey Anthony's attorney, earlier this week, and he wanted the court to stop any release of some images, several thousand images, in Casey Anthony's Photo Bucket account. Photo Bucket, as you know, is the photo sharing service. Okay, the judge held on his ruling right then and there, but came out and later that night saying, "No, we're not going to hold back on this due to the fact that it's the public's need to know." And some of the images are shocking. For example, the picture that we have seen, the doe-eyed Kaylee Anthony there on the pillow looking up so innocently. Well, if you enlarge that picture, which has happened now, there's a little heart on the pillow.
Yeah,
it's the same type of heart that was found in the duct tape that was on Kaylee Anthony's mouth when her body was discovered on December 11th. The pictures are out there. I've put them on our website, WNBB.AM, and a lot of them deal with skulls and bones and things of that nature. I mean, it's really bizarre, Dana.
Yeah, it makes the hair in the back of your neck stand up. What's going on with the death penalty? It's on again, off again, on again. Sounds like it's off again.
Well, here's the deal on that. And this was explained to me by some of the legal eagles that Nancy Grace has on her show on CNN Headline News, is that it's off right now, okay, because they had not discovered the body. Once they discovered the body in December, it's still off the table. But once a panel is, once a jury is impaneled, the prosecution is expected to come out and say, this is now a death penalty case, which somewhat changes the dynamics, but Baez is expecting that right off the bat.
Mark Williams is here. He's the news director at WNDB. I'm not sure if you saw this report or not, and it's, you know, it just seems to go from bizarre to even stranger. And again, remember, folks, there's only one victim in this case, and that's little Kaylee Anthony, and
right. Hopefully
justice will be served. And I'm almost embarrassed to ask about it, but Casey Anthony and her lawyer sharing a piece of licorice?
Yeah, and that came out today in some documents that were released by the prosecution under the Freedom of Information Act. And here's the deal: remember that scene in Lady and the Tramp, that Disney movie where they were sharing a strand of spaghetti,
right?
And then they got too close and they almost kissed.
Oh God!
Well, apparently this is basically what happened in the Orange County Jail during one of Baez's visits to see Casey Anthony. It doesn't surprise me whatsoever. There had been talk when she was out on bail. She spent a lot of time at Baez's office. I'm not implicating anything, or I'm not insinuating anything. You know, everybody can put two and two together. That's all I'm going to say. She wasn't there watching the cartoon channel at his Kissimmee office.
Jeez. One last question, Mark. And I got in trouble a little bit last week, and that's okay. My hate mail bucket filled up a little bit. When I talked about Florida and how in most communities on every corner you find a stop sign or a mailbox, but it seems like in Florida on every street corner you find a registered sex offender. And now we have the Cummings case.
Yep.
I'm not saying that a sex offender has anything to do with Kaylee Anthony. We know that it doesn't. But it just seems like the stigma of Florida, you know, go back to Lunsford and other cases, is out there, and it's actually kind of scary.
You know, it is, and there's a way you could always check on sex offenders, and that's through the Florida Department of Law Enforcement website. They have a sex offender website. When the Haley Cummings case erupted 3 weeks ago in neighboring Putnam County, there were like 20-some-odd sex offenders that lived in the area.
Yeah.
I don't know what the story is there. I just got done doing our afternoon talk show, filling in for one of our guys. And I put that question out. I says, what is the deal here? You know, we haven't heard from the cops. We haven't heard from anybody in more than a week.
No.
And you have a strange situation here where this place in Satsuma, which is in Putnam County, is a wide spot in the road. A lot of mobile homes up there. Ronald Cummings, Haley's father, is living with his live-in 17-year-old girlfriend. Apparently, he was courting her when she was 14.
Jeez.
And this has gone on up there, as somebody told me one time. Well, the branches of the trees kind of go straight up, but they don't go off on the side at all.
Yeah.
And I'm going to leave that right there.
Absolutely. Mark Williams, it's always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Anytime, Dana.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You bet.
That's Mark Williams, news director from WNDB. You see Mark on Nancy Grace talking about the Casey Anthony case and Haley Cummings, and there's so many of them. Hopefully, justice will be served. My name is Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Okay, we're back. I know I give you lots of websites to look at. Here's another one to go to, www.jessefoster.ca, www.jessefoster, that's J-E-S-S-I-E, Foster is F-O-S-T-E-R, that's all one word, jessefoster.ca. Jesse disappeared from North Las Vegas, Nevada between March 28th and April 3rd, 2006. She was last seen at 1009 Cornerstone Place with her boyfriend Peter Todd. Peter's a pimp and has a prior conviction for spousal assault. Prior to her disappearance, Jesse traveled to Nevada, New York, and Florida with a Donald Vaz. She was recruited in Calgary by a Von Hubrexen to work in Las Vegas. Jesse may have fallen victim to an international human trafficking ring. I like to bring these stories back because we need to get answers. Of course, there's a $50,000 reward for information into the disappearance of Jessica Louise Foster. And her mom, Glendine Grant's on the phone with me. Hi, Glendine.
Hi. How are you?
I'm fine. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
I will continue as long as I have breath in my body and the funds to run the show, and those are always few and far between, but we keep plugging along, do these stories because the mainstream media just doesn't do enough.
Oh.
Although you have worked hard to get the story out there, what's been going on with the case, and tell us a little bit about Jesse.
Oh, well, thank you again for having me at Well, Jesse is my second oldest out of four daughters, and like you say, she was down in Las Vegas. She was planning on coming back to Kamloops and go to her stepsister's wedding in Calgary. And the very next day, we went to talk to her, and we've never heard from her since. It's been at first, the police just told us that, you know, she was working as a prostitute and she probably chose to take off. She might be embarrassed. But we hired a private eye and he found that there was hospital records and there was proof that Jessie was being beaten and forced to work at this escort agency. I've even talked to the person who manages that escort agency myself, and she told me a lot, let me know that Jessie was afraid of the person who was making her work there, and that Jessie was not working there because she wanted to be a prostitute, that Jessie did not have a drug problem. She stressed so hard for me to understand that, and I never really believed that Jessie did. I didn't think that Jessie made those choices. The very first day that Jessie didn't return her sister's call, I felt in my stomach, and as deep down as my instincts can go, I felt something was wrong, and I just never let it be. You know, my daughter just didn't go missing, and me just stopped thinking about it. I eat, sleep, and breathe my daughter's disappearance, and like you say, the media just doesn't do enough. I have been fortunate enough to keep at it. I don't know if it's because I have a lot of internet experience, or if I just am like a bulldog and I just don't stop, because I've literally made them take attention to Jesse's case simply by just not stopping, simply by bombarding them until they finally do call me back. And once that happens, they realize that Jesse's case, though there are a lot like it, is different than a lot. Jesse's from Canada. She went missing in the United States, so her case is international. Jesse's case happened right around the time that human trafficking started really hitting the news. And I'm so grateful for that, I guess you could say, for the timing of this all, that people stopped thinking that this was something that only happened in other countries where, you know, the countries were like third world countries, or even on just on TV shows. They started really noticing these things are happening around us,
You know, I'm from Kamloops, B.C. We haven't even hit 100,000 people in our little city here, and it hit us here. You know, we've got such great support from our people who live in Kamloops and from people in Calgary and Edmonton. You know, Jessie was born and she graduated in Calgary and lived here, you know, in all the years in between. And people are just realizing, you know, she's our kid. She's, you know, she's not just my kid. I really think of her as our Canadian girl who went missing. A lot of people know about Natalie Holloway. She went to another country and went missing. Not everybody knows about our girl who went to another country and went missing. And and we need to remember, you know, that her case is still open. There may not be very many tips and clues, but it hasn't died down. And I think mainly that's because she's still out there and there is, you know, there is going to be answers. And I just believe that with all my heart. And I have to. I have to hold on to that, you know. And if Jessie's not alive, you know, Dana, I'm going to keep looking till I find her either way.
And, you know, that Glendine Grant is here, and we're talking about her missing daughter, Jessica Foster. And, again, go to jessiefoster.ca for more information. There's a $50,000 reward for information regarding her disappearance. But that mother's instinct, Glendine, is so strong. I've had many mothers on my program whose, you know, children are missing. And it may seem weird, but I buy into it a lot. And your strength is amazing. But, you know, and I hate to say it, but I'm so damn mad at the media right now that, yeah, they do a good job on the stories that they cover, but I'm going to talk about this a little bit later on. Drew Peterson, who is suspected in the disappearance of and the death of two of his wives, saying that West Coast promoters are going to set up a pay-per-view fight between him and his live-in girlfriend's ex-boyfriend and pay them a bunch of money to do this. And you know what? That just makes me want to vomit. If the media is going to spend time and money on that garbage, then they should be spending more time and more money on cases like your daughter's, all the missing people that are out there. Give Tim Miller and Texas EquiSearch some dough. Help people try and find the missing. Never mind this pay-per-view boxing match BS. And it just sickens me. And I didn't want to talk about that with you, but just before I let you go, Glendine, you have been very busy. You send out emails. You have the website. There's been some recovery of remains in New Mexico, I believe.
Yeah, and Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Yeah.
I think they found 13 sets of remains in the last month. And they do believe that most of them are from the Albuquerque area. However, there are some that obviously, you know, they're not all going to be from there. So as soon as I heard about that, I, of course, submitted Jessie's name. Her DNA is on file. And in my opinion, you know, if Jessie can be anywhere, that means I want to rule out places that I, you know, to show that that's not her, that's not where she is. We can move on and keep looking. But I also, you know, I am a realist. I do know that there is a chance that she's not alive. So I do submit Jessie's name in case number two things that come up. I have a lot of support. I get a lot more information from cases out there than perhaps, you know, an average person. Obviously, an average person. And I just, you know, make sure that I just read and learn about as much as I can. I've become an advocate of, you know, more than just Jessie. I have friends who have missing children. I have friends who have missing parents, sisters. I have friends who have children who have been murdered and they're unsolved. And going back to that instinct thing too, you know, there are a lot of the women who I am friends with whose children have been murdered, and they knew right from the beginning that their children would not be coming home alive. And myself, I've had that opposite instinct, so that is why I don't just feel that's my instinct in my own gut, but I've talked to other women whose children have come home. Some have come home alive and some have come home and they're not alive, but it seems as if the mother was prepared either way. And so I'm just prepared either way. I'm expecting her to come home alive. I'm hoping her to come alive, but doesn't mean it's going to stop me from seeing if Jessie's remains are in a group of 13. That's an awful lot of people to have to find out who those bones belong to.
Absolutely.
That's a lot of families who are going to get closure.
Yeah,
because obviously they've been dealing with missing family members for as long as 2006 or even longer. So as terrible as this ordeal is in Albuquerque, you know, it's ultimately going to be a good thing. There's going to be a lot of families that can now, I guess you could say, stop the search and start looking for the justice, because those girls are going to need to get justice.
Justice is so important. Again, the website regarding the disappearance of Jessica Edith Louise Foster is www.jessiefoster.ca. Thank you, Glendine.
Thank you, Dana.
I'll stay in touch. Bye-bye. We're going to take a break. This is Scared Monkeys Radio, and we're going to be back with a new blogger, someone that Scared Monkeys Radio and ScaredMonkeys.com have started to work with. Of course, Blink 34 has a new blog called Blink on Crime, and we're going to talk about that. That's here on the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, we're going to cut in a little bit early here. Blink 34 is a welcome member of the Scared Monkeys team. And I thought I would bring her on to talk about her new website called Blink on Crime. And if you want to find out about the world of crime, kind of like what we do at Scared Monkeys, and it's great to have her to work with, go to blinkoncrime.com. You'll see a link in the show notes. Welcome to the program, ma'am.
Well, thank you, Dana. Thanks for having me over.
It's always nice to have a new monkey. Well, you're not that new, but a new monkey on the...
part of the monkey family.
Yeah, on the monkey family here. Let's talk about the blog a little bit. What do you do at Blink on Crime?
Well, new in terms of today or...
Well, just pretty much
we're working on
what you do all the time.
Well, I think for those that aren't familiar, the best way to describe it is that Red and I had talked for quite a while about how to put something together that is kind of the blend of true crime, but with not the gloss over that you get in the mainstream media, meaning you get the same story on five different sites and five different outlets, and it's not really original content. You know, that's what really people want to know and how they want to be engaged. So that's kind of the premise in Blink on Crime. We'll do mostly true crime with some missing persons cases in there because, you know, obviously they get lumped together. But it's been very well received, and I've been very happy with the community, of course, from the Scared Monkey side and all our new visitors.
You know, the public has a... and I hate using the term, but it is a craving for information on these high-profile cases. The blogs, the internet, I'll blow my own horn a little bit, shows like mine, we kick butt when it comes to these types of stories because we tell it like it is. We're not the mainstream media where we do it in little five, or not even 5 second, but 30-second sound bites and kind of spin it one way or the other. I'm not sure if you've been listening, but we focus on the missing as a part of my program, and there's so many missing people out there that the media will cherry pick stories. And I'm not saying that the Anthony stories and the other stories aren't important, but there's a lot more out there. You know, I was just reading a story here, and I'm going to lambaste them a little bit later on, that Drew Peterson may have a deal with West Coast promoters to have a live pay-per-view match where he fights his girlfriend's ex-boyfriend on TV. That type of crap just makes me want to puke in the corner. I hate to be graphic, because there are so many people out there that want airtime, that deserve airtime, and when the media does that kind of that schlocky crap, then we need to have the Blinks on Crime, the Scared Monkeys, to go and get what the public really wants to know, and that's the truth.
It is, and I couldn't agree with you more. I think that, you know, the injustice of what you're referring to is my motivation. I know it's your motivation and motivation of people in general that, you know, they want to make a difference. They want to be heard about the fact that this, you're right, the missing persons world, this is an epidemic. I mean, I really, getting into this, you know, genre, if you will, had no idea. And whether, you know, it's a high-profile case such as the Anthony case or, you know, let's call it less attractive, less salacious to the media, as in the Haley Cummings case, you know, the contrast of those two would be a prime example. the families feel the same loss and the same pain. There is no difference to them in their frustration and agitation in the missing loved one. And I think that's one of the things that we really try to focus on is to give the perspective of, strip away the salaciousness and the sensationalism, and here's really facts. Here's really what you have to focus on to hopefully have a voice in either preventing injustice or helping find someone that's missing.
We're talking about the new blog, blinkoncrime.com. We here at Scared Monkeys love working with this organization and this blog. And just before I let you go, and I really appreciate you coming on, I'm just looking at some of the stories on your blog. And I was talking to Mark Williams from WNDB a little earlier on tonight on air about this. And I see you reporting it on your webpage also about the, and I'm starting to tear up, and I can hear the violin music playing. Casey Anthony and Jose Baez sharing a piece of licorice a la Lady and the Tramp, the cartoon from years back. What kind of crazy crap is that? Like, this is unbelievable.
I want to get to the point, Dana, where it is unbelievable, because I'm not there yet. In other words, I was reviewing the discovery documents, and I still am flabbergasted at the behavior of some of the individuals that are involved. I'll be honest, I was completely prepared to do an article on the discovery today, and I've been at it three times, and I'm that angry that that's not going to be my best time. I have to try, and even though as you and I know, we can be somewhat subjective as opposed to mainstream media just reporting the facts, but I do try to maintain a level of neutrality. But I find myself going, are you kidding me? You stayed at the Ritz and ate crab puffs instead of driving past the dumping ground of your granddaughter.
Yeah.
And that incenses me.
Yep. No, I couldn't agree more. And it's that sort of stuff that the public needs to know about and maybe open their eyes a little bit. Anyway, thank you for coming on. The blog is Blink on Crime, and I'm sure we'll do this again. Thank you.
My pleasure, Dana. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too.
And we're going to be back in a minute with, I got to think of a, it's going to be a new segment, although it's an old segment, because Robin Sachs, ADA out of Los Angeles County, joins me quite often on the program, but we're going to have Robin on regularly at the end of the show to talk about high-profile cases in the news, and I got to see what Robin has to say about this Lady and the Tramp routine with Baez and Casey, if true, sharing a piece of licorice and... I don't know. It just makes you sick. That and the Drew Peterson boxing match on pay-per-view. My name's Dana Presser. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, here's your host, Dana Presser.
Okay, we're back. I got to think of a title for this next segment. Maybe we can put some money or money. God, maybe we can put some. Maybe we can put some music to it or something. But one of our favorite guests here is Robin Sachs. You know Robin as a assistant district attorney out of Los Angeles County, an author, of course. Her new book, "Predators and Child Molesters: What Every Parent Needs to Know to Keep Their Kids Safe," is available for pre-order. There's a link on the show notes. She does something. Maybe we could call this Sachs Facts. No, I think you do that already. That's where you talk about how to make Jello and lemon meringue pie and stuff. Don't you?
Hey, I talk about really important things, like where to buy the best handbag, and where you can get a good deal online. I think maybe Sachs Facts would work because I kind of think of myself as a cultural connoisseur from everything from crime and shopping. It's always good to balance those things out.
Well, I tell you, I've been shopping, and sometimes that's a crime. So I need a little drum roll in the background. But anyway, let's get at this.
On house arrest, actually, right now.
We're going to bring in Robin at the end of every show to talk about, when she's available, of course, to talk about high-profile cases in the news. I'm going to start out with some breaking news, and I'm not sure if you can even talk about this, about our friend... what's his name? Rihanna's Brown. Man, Mr. Brown. God. He's up on two felonies. Can you comment on that?
I will for you.
Okay.
I will for you, Dana. I've been kind of keeping my mouth shut, but I'm here to tell you that I was actually the first prosecutor that was involved in this case and personally assisted in helping Mark Aragos arrange to have his client do the right thing and at least surrender so that we wouldn't have a breakup of the Grammys. And I actually walked into the police station on that Sunday following a manicure, I have to add, where they were trying to lay out a map, and they were indeed working to figure out a plan to break up the Grammys, and Mr. Garagos called me, knowing that I had access to law enforcement, and since he wanted to do the right thing, I was willing to help him out.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think there was a court appearance today. There's no contact, am I right?
There is. It's interesting. Judge Lasso, I've been in her courtroom many, many times, did order a no contact order, but not a complete stay away order. So, and it's actually interesting. The Rihanna's lawyer, who I just saw quoted in the transcripts that I'm seeing, is that it wouldn't be necessary to have a no contact order. And normally, we would require a victim themselves to come in and actually testify and say under oath that why they didn't want the order, because no judge usually wants to put themselves out there and twist in the wind alone should something happen. This court took counsel's representation and allowed for that order.
You know, we've talked about the picture, and I won't get into that again. People can make their own minds up. But again, it's the scourge of domestic violence and how the courts are handling this. A lot of people will say that this is going to be another Hollywood trial if it goes that far. You know, there's got to be education, not only for the victims, the accused, obviously, the courts, police officers, district attorneys, defense lawyers, you name it, about domestic violence. It's just such a big problem out there, and really, I don't think we're handling it well enough.
Well, it's interesting. You know, it kind of was like the crime du jour following the O.J. Simpson double murder trial, and it was really a hot-button, hot-ticket item, a lot of legislation, a lot of evidence code changes throughout the country, you know, vertical units set up so that prosecutors were specially trained and law enforcement were specially trained to handle these cases, defense attorneys going to all kinds of trials, and then, kind of died, so to speak, over the last, few years and kind of lost its allure, and you don't really hear about it. And then all of a sudden this case pops up and it kind of reminds us, well, where, from where have we come? And I don't know that we've made that much of a difference if we're seeing, the clear cycle of violence repeating itself here with Rihanna getting back together with Chris Brown. We're seeing, a perpetrator who caused lots of injury who's out on bail. Although I have to tell you, I don't see this case go to trial.
No, I actually don't either, but that's another story for another day. Let's get into Casey Anthony. Like many males in Florida have, I'm sorry, I don't know why I said that. Casey Anthony.
That's what I'm worried about, actually. You bring up the point that I'm actually worried about with this case in terms of the death penalty issue, and I'm sorry, maybe I'm jumping ahead of you.
Yep.
But, my husband, who I usually think is pretty rational, I mean, he married me, and he and I were talking, and I pulled up a picture, and he looked at her, and one second later, and he goes, Robin, she's hot. And then I had someone on our radio show the other night saying that she looked like me, which was a frightening thing to say. And then, of course, I know she's hot. But so then it really made me think, if there's male jurors on this panel, and, we know how enthralled people get with, yep. How women fall for the men and they marry them. It may be a factor that she was too pretty to do this crime, and she doesn't fit the profile in terms of the juror's mind and part of why they may have taken that off the table.
Let's hope not, but I'm not sure about the comparison between you and Casey Anthony. Who's saying that? Dittrich after she'd had some wine or what?
It was actually somebody in the chat room. Okay, all right, well anyway, listen, there's all the evidence
they keep calling it evidence, all these pictures that were released, and apparently Casey has a new lawyer now. He's a civil litigation lawyer, but the thing that I found totally bizarre. And I had Mark Williams on tonight from WNDB Radio, who's on Nancy Gray's show, talking about this case all the time, was the apparent sharing of a piece of licorice between Jose Baez and Casey Anthony, a la Lady and the Tramp. If I could cue up the music, or it should be Attorney and the Tramp. No, I'm being a bad guy again.
Hey, watch it.
Yeah, I know I'm going to get in trouble here. But can you imagine? And now this crap has gone public about the two of them chewing on a piece of licorice together. What's up with that?
You know, there is nothing that surprises me with this case, and there's nothing that surprised me with Jose Baez. I mean, if you're looking at this is somebody who's got, you know, less than 3 years of experience in terms of handling cases, and this is probably, you know, one of the biggest cases that you've seen in Orlando, and it just, you know, it does blow my mind. I can't even comment on it because it's just, it's like, are you kidding me? These pictures, the behavior, the, you know, the memorial, the, you know, suicide attempts, the leave deposition. I mean, it's all like, are you kidding me that this is really happening in a case where there's this 2.5 beautiful little child who is been murdered by her mother?
Yep. If true, it's just another bizarre thing. Speaking of bizarre things, I'll share this with you. It comes from the WBBM News Radio 780 website about my good personal friend, Drew Peterson. Drew Peterson says West Coast promoters may set up a fight between him and his live-in girlfriend's ex-boyfriend. It's the latest in the sideshow that is almost a year and a half old now. Peterson says he's been challenged to a fight by his girlfriend's ex-boyfriend, and he says let him put his money where his mouth is and see what he's got. When asked what he would do with his share of the money, it must be a pay-per-view event. He said he would keep it or give it to charity, but his biggest charity is his children. I think Drew Peterson's biggest charity is his brain. This is unfrickin' believable. If there is any promoter or any organization or any idiot that would spend 5 cents on watching this guy and his girlfriend's ex-boyfriend or whatever the hell it is beat their brains in, it's unbelievable. Spend some money and donate to Tim Miller at Texas Equisearch. Try and help find a missing person or do something. This is unbelievable. I'm going to blast him in my tomorrow's commentary. I'm all for Robin Sachs. People, even accused of crimes, coming on this program and others saying that they're innocent or saying that they're being mistreated. But this is just a total circus crap act now. And both Joel Brodsky and Drew Peterson, if this is true, need their butts kicked from here to the moon.
Well, I would, if this is true, it makes a mockery out of our whole treatment of victims in our society. I mean, here you have, regardless, I mean, let's not forget what we're dealing with. Let's assume for a second, if we can, that Drew is not the person who's responsible for his missing wife and the death of, you know, the two or three, depending on what theories you want to believe, others. The fact is that he's talking and arranging fights with Geraldo Rivera and ex-boyfriends, and we're going to duke it out, and we're supposed to have any sort of, you know, scheme sort of sympathy for this man. I mean, this guy should be crying every minute of every day. I mean, geez, at least OJ went out and said, I'm looking for the real murderer. I mean, for crying out loud, at least he had a little bit of heart to try to take care of his kid. But I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, and I just got an email from a listener saying, can I fight Peterson? I'll kick his ass. Good God, I've had it with this man, and I think, and myself, and again, I've had him on the program. I've talked to him off air, and he kept telling me that he was tired of how he was being portrayed in the media. Well, he's portraying himself like an absolute freak in the media, and if this pay-per-view thing is right, and he makes 1 cent off this, then there's something terribly wrong with the world today. today. Justice Interrupt.
I want to talk to you actually about this issue actually of cashing in on crime. It's an issue that I really think, I mean, it kind of plays into both the Rihanna case and TMZ and people who misuse the system. While there are true righteous victims out there and victims who don't have the money or resources or, you know, have to mortgage out their house, which they can't even do because you can't get a loan nowadays to even do that, and, you know, have nothing and spend their lives trying to get justice. And then you have these people who are sitting here profiting off the hurt, loss, and sadness and injustice that happens. It makes me sick.
Yeah. One last comment. Manitoba, Canada, not too far from me, a while back, there was a gruesome, tragic incident where an individual passenger on a Greyhound bus actually beheaded another passenger, was eating the flesh when police finally took him into custody. Today, a judge found up here in Canada, the accused, his last name is Lee, not criminally responsible is what they call it up here, and he will spend a period of time in a mental institution. I'm curious your thoughts on insanity defenses, and I don't buy it. I think that jails could have psychiatric wards, a lot of them do, and putting him in a hospital rather than in a jail because of the crime that he did is not protecting society. Your thoughts?
Well, I just have a question in terms of this case, that particular case. Was it post-conviction, meaning he was already convicted,
yes,
or was he not guilty by reason of insanity? Which
no,
is different.
Yeah, pled not guilty by reason of insanity, and up here, a judge is able to find him not criminally responsible. Not saying not guilty, but not criminally responsible.
You know what drives me crazy, and it's similar to what it has here. Here, we, in California at least, courts will suspend sentences or suspend the progression of a criminal case and suspend the whole process and stop the process until the person regains sanity. So then who gets prejudiced by that? I mean, there's no benefit ever for the prosecution for a case to get delayed over time because, as we know, witnesses lose their, you know, memories fade, evidence gets destroyed, police officers, detectives, DAs get transferred, retire, etc. The only thing that gets better with time is fine wine. So what happens is that in a situation like this, and they're not guilty, or, you know, by reason of insanity, or where proceedings are suspended, what happens is it doesn't, the justification that a lot of defense attorneys have saying, well, listen, when the defendant regains sanity, you're more than welcome to try him and convict him. Well, that's really helpful in about 10 or 15 years when all the witnesses are dead or gone and there's no evidence left. And so then that person ends up walking. And I'm with you. I think if you're not guilty by reason of insanity, then you get, you know, okay, an automatic amount of time in the psychiatric ward of, you know, a nice cell.
Yep, absolutely. And that's protecting society. Putting him in a hospital isn't. Her name is Robin Sachs, ADA out of Los Angeles County. You can hear her Tuesday nights on Justice Interrupted. Her website is robinsachs.com. She's an author. She's a victim's advocate. She has the Sachs Facts, where she tells you how to make bundt cake and paint your toenails, and how she'll go out.
I don't know how to make a cake.
She'll go out and kick the ass of child predators too, and put them in jail where they belong. And she's going to be a regular feature here on the program. Robin, as usual, thank you, ma'am.
Thank you so much. Talk to you later. Have a good night.
We'll talk next week. Thank you. Bye-bye. And that's it. That's tonight's show. Remember, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. We'll see you soon. Good night.
This has been the Dana Pretzer Show. Visit us online at scaredmonkeysradio.com. Thanks for listening.